We end the year discussing memoirs on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Before he retired, Darryl Leitz helped people with their memoirs. He's our guest today on Scribble. Darryl, you're really here to help Roald write his memoirs.
No, you're here to help Don write his or no. prod him into writing his memoirs.
No. You got it all wrong, Tweet. Anyway, you're here, Darryl. That's the big thing.
Let me begin with a big question, Darryl. Have you ever written your memoir?
I have, and I finished it about 5 years ago. That I grew up as a Depression person, and it overcame some very difficult times, and our kids kept saying, "Dad, when are you going to tell your story?" And so finally, 4 years ago, I finished the story, and I titled it, "You Asked for It." And so that was an incentive to spread the word, and I believe very strongly that we all have a story to tell, and if we don't tell that story, who will?
But the problem is, if you tell that story, how's it going to be preserved? Is it going to be published or put in a file somewhere? And who's going to read it? And if we all did that, we would chop down every tree in the world to get it on paper.
Well, that is true. But most of the people who write the memoirs in the classes that I've taught, that they aren't writing for publication. They're writing to share their story with their children and their grandchildren. And that's what I did. Mm-hmm. My story was not meant to be published outside. It was written for my family.
Now, you say when you were teaching memoirs, where and how did you get into the business of teaching memoir writing?
Well, I guess started with my own story, and I was fascinated by it. And a couple people said to me, "Darryl, why don't you—" I live at Ridgecrest, and a couple people said, "Why don't you run a story class for us?" And so I did the first one. I had 15 people, retirees from Ridgecrest, that took the class, and it was really a fun class. And so that was the impetus to continue. And since then, I've done 6 classes. The most recent one was one I taught at the Eastern Avenue Library as part of the Davenport Library System. And I had 15 people from around the community, and they were really a refreshing group.
Mm-hmm. Are you a teacher by profession?
Yes. I started teaching in 1950. And I taught until 1967. Then I became a school administrator. And my colleague said, "You became one of them."
My wife was a union steward with a telephone company. And once they made her steward, then the telephone company hired her to go into the office. Once they find out you've got some kind of talent, they grab you. But you do become one of them then. What did you teach?
I taught English and reading, but English was my primary interest.
Mm-hmm. Where did you teach?
Williams Junior High. Before that, I taught 6 years at Estherville up in northwest Iowa. And then when my wife and I got married in 1957, we made the move to Davenport. And so we stayed at Davenport and finished my career there. My kids cannot believe that I spent my whole career in the Davenport school system.
Let me ask a basic question. What is a memoir? I got to when we I heard you were coming, I got to thinking there, you know, people can write autobiographies and they can write diaries, but memoir is something different from those?
Well, not necessarily. When we teach the class, we tell people they can do one of two things. They can do a series of life reflection stories, things that happened to you that you wanted to share. They do not have to be in chronological order. The other option is to write an autobiography starting early age and so on and so on. And that's very difficult to write because it becomes very cumbersome. And most of people find it easier to write what we call life reflection stories, and then they continue to write those, and then after they collect so many of them, they begin to see some kind of pattern, and they put it together. And basically, it's how do you want to be remembered? Sharing.
Can you give us an example of a life reflection story?
Yes, I could. A life reflection story might be an example. One of my students wrote about his father was a printer with the old Quad City Times downtown, and that's when things were done automatically and they didn't have all these things to keep track of how many copies were printed and so on. And they had this dial that would set, and he watched his father set that dial, and he was fascinated by that, and so he turned the dial. And his father said, "What have you done? What have you done?" And so they had to retrieve all that. Well, this person wrote about that experience. Mm-hmm. And it was fascinating, you know, that he remembered that. It was a significant point of view. Another one wrote about experience at a carnival and being the hawker saying, test your age. I can tell you your age, whatever the case may be. And he got hooked into that, and so he told about that experience at the carnival, and he called it The Carnival Comes to Town. Uh-huh. And so you can write about anything. I wrote, because I have a hearing loss, one of mine was hearing loss, and I wrote about my experience in losing my hearing.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, can you... Well, you can't relate the whole thing from memory, but can you give us an example of a 2 or 3 minute stretch of something in your memoirs?
Yes. Well, the chapters I like best.
Okay.
When I was writing my memoir was, of course, the birth of my children and their school experiences and their graduation from college. Obviously, I was a very proud father. They did well in school, and I was very proud of it and glad to say they were my child. And they've been very grateful and very stimulating to me. My hearing loss, I mentioned that. I like to tell the story about how I met my wife. That was a chapter. And we were both teaching up at Estherville, and one of the rules they had up at Estherville was that if you wanted to attend productions, athletic events, you had to sell three times you had to sell tickets. And the first night, and I remember this, it was September 14th of 1956. I was taking tickets, and I saw this beautiful woman coming across the walk. And I said, I knew she was a new hire. And I said, that's the person I want to marry. And a year later, we got married. So one of my chapters in my book is about that. Mm-hmm. So is it significant? Yeah, it's significant to me. But, you know, yeah. That... another one that I wrote about is my disappointment. I was an athlete and I had always been able to make the team. When I was a junior in college, I discovered that my talents were not enough to make the team. And how disappointed I was when I didn't make the cut list. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote about that. And so things you recall, and we ask the students when they write to list topics they may want to write about. And we usually ask them, the first or second classes, to list 25 things that you might want to write about. And they always say, 25? And I say, 25.
And they probably end up with 50, right? Because it seems...
One person came, and they all come with 25. And one person came with 75. And I said, you have a lot to write about. And so that's exciting. And so during our class, we ask them to share a story that they've written. And it's so much fun to have these people read what they've written. And then the people, I would say, what did you like about that? And they would respond and say, I like the way you did this. I like the way you did this. And we weren't critical as far as English prose or anything like that. It's your story, and you get to tell it the way you want to tell it.
You didn't do any correction for grammar or anything?
We help them if they need corrections on that, but we don't do any major editing. You know, it'd be better if you change this paragraph around. Someone might suggest they do that, but it isn't a requirement that they make the change. We try to keep it very positive, and it's amazing how the class comes together and really bonds and shares something. And a couple of my people in the last class were former students of mine out at Williams, and it was fun to see those students responding to my class.
So I see, Roald, it isn't really that hard. You can do it.
Well, I mean,
he's stammering again.
I could and I should. You know, my mother was an English teacher, too, and she did end up eventually writing a little bit of her story, and I wish she'd done more of it, too. And I don't know why I can't sit down, and partly because my mother kept saying, you know, if you want to write about your Uncle Lars, write about this, write. She wanted me to write about these kinds of things that Daryl's talking about. And I guess I showed her too well and never have.
You know what I think might inhibit both of us is we appreciate good writing. And the thought of having to write and having read Shakespeare and Thoreau and Emerson and all those people, it's a little daunting. Yes. To start writing. You think, I can't quite do that. And unless you're willing to just forget all that and start writing, then you're going to be stymied.
Yeah, I mean, Daryl, how do you get these people to loosen up? It seems to me that...
Well, what we do, the class usually runs six weeks and an hour each time. And each time they're asked to write something. So at the end of 6 weeks, they would have written six pieces. That is to be their start. And then hopefully they will continue to write. And basically, we tell them that they have to, if they want to be successful, they have to set aside a certain time during the day that they're writing time. And this is the time I'm going to write. And it might be an hour and so on. And you have to follow that commitment. Unfortunately, most of the people in the class, once the class ends, their writing ends. Although we've had 9 people who have completed their memoirs. And it's very rewarding when I get the telephone call from saying, Daryl, I finished my story. And tomorrow morning I'm meeting with one of the people who finished his story. And he's all excited about it. And he said, I want you to have a copy of my story. And it isn't anything I did. It was just what the class did. And I was motivated to do this because in my life story, I talked about the golden eagles in my life. That was a very important chapter. And these golden eagles were 4 people who entered my life and helped me. And they didn't ask. They didn't honk. You know, applaud themselves for helping. They just did it. And that's one reason I want to write these classes or do these classes is because I feel an obligation, and I hope to be a golden eagle to some of these people.
Does the act of writing for people bring back memories they didn't even realize they had?
Oh, very definitely, very definitely. And they talk about that. And, you know, different kinds of writing that people do and what they hope to accomplish. One of the women in the class last time, she was writing history of her grandfather's life. So it wasn't a personal thing. It was about her grandfather. So she was doing research, and she wanted to preserve interests about her grandfather.
You know, as I listen to you talk about this, I think, as I often think, that I wish I had been able to spend more time with my own father, or that he had been inclined to write. Because it seems to me his life at a different time, being born in 1896 and living through the first half of the century, in a place that I can remember, and I remember it as being entirely different from where and how I live now. Even some of his language was different, and I wish I could get hold of that, but it's gone.
Yes.
And so that is a good incentive for someone to leave a memoir.
Yes.
And so, tweet, you're out of excuses.
We call our class Turning Memories into Memoir. And so we ask people to recall their memories.
But isn't memory kind of tricky? You know, when you go back, the psychologists will tell us when you remember something, you are reconstructing it. And you may not be exactly correct.
Yes.
And I have found myself being guilty of that a couple of times.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's alarming. I think, I thought it happened this way. Well, one of my kids will tell me, no, it happened this way. And I think, well, I've got to be careful here. You have to sort out your memories and try to hang them onto real things.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's fantasy.
Daryl, have you discovered a difference between the kind of memoirs women in your class write from men?
Not really. You know, I think women tend to have a more personable touch. And men often talk about their children, their careers, and so on. And women tend to write more about family, things that happen within the family. But
yeah.
That's up to them.
Those are the great things, though.
Yeah.
When my kids are together and start talking, I listen carefully
right.
because I learn a lot of stuff
right.
I didn't know.
Are people who've completed their memoirs generally more satisfied with their lives after they've reflected on them this way or disappointed?
No, I'd say satisfied. I have a woman out at Eldridge. She and her husband are both writing there. She has finished hers, and he's nearly finished. And she is so proud of what she has done. And she said, I've shared my story with other family members, and they're just amazed that I could do that.
Yeah, I got to thinking about that, and I imagine that writing your memoir would make you feel better about what you've done.
Very different.
Danger is that you necessarily put yourself at the center of the story. And maybe in some of the stories you were not the main player, but a member of the team. But you have to be careful because you're always writing from that personal perspective. And that's, you know, if you're a stickler for accuracy, and I try to be, that kind of gets in the way.
Yes.
Because you tend to make yourself the hero, and maybe you aren't.
Yes.
But that's, writing is, why is writing so hard today? Why is it people are so reluctant to write? And you're looking at one right now.
Two.
Well, you are expressing your talents many different ways. But, I found since I wrote my story that I'm still doing add-ons, that I remember things that I want to write about. And one of them was about my Grandpa Engel. And he was in the World War One area, and he was in the Russian, he lived in Germany, he was on the German-Russian front, and he decided he didn't want to be a soldier anymore. So he deserted and came to America, left his wife and three kids in Germany. And, you know, I didn't ask Grandpa about those stories. I wish it, but they're gone now.
Right.
But I do know that part about it because he did tell that. But I remember as a child, he used to tell stories. And I'm saying, how did he learn English? Why did he decide to locate in Macogata, Iowa area? You know, how did those things happen? And how did he get his family over here? And how did they all learn English? It's just amazing. And I didn't ask those questions.
Are the memoirs, specifically the memoir that you've written, Daryl, for family eyes only, or?
No, it's intended to be read by family, but I've had several people who have purchased my memoir.
Okay. So purchase being, how did they get published?
Well, my granddaughter is a freelance writer, and so she had contacts with a company called Blurb. And so she arranged, she did the organization of it and putting the pictures in the proper place and so forth and sending it off to Blurb and got it published.
Well, I applaud your industry, and I sit here cloaked in self-reproach. Because there are a lot of things I'm supposed to be writing, not just about me, but to try to start is just almost impossible. Maybe I need you to teach me a class.
I don't teach. I facilitate. And what I'm trying to do is encourage people to write. And I keep saying, you know, our class, you know, you're going to bring a treasure chest. And your treasure chest is a three-ring notebook. And we're going to, in the class, we're going to fill that treasure chest. And during the course of your writing, you're going to prime the pump. And you're going to look for things in your treasure chest that you might want to write about. And so we want you to list topics that might be in your treasure chest and say, I don't want that one, I'll take this one, and depend on your mood. And so when they leave the class, they have a notebook filled with handouts, other people's writings, and so forth.
Well, that's a wonderful thought. That really is. Daryl, I think you make an excellent facilitator. And I can practically guarantee you that Roll Tweed's going to get busy on his memoirs. As we end this year and head into another one, this will be the year that you write, Roald.
All right.
Yeah, okay. And the next year, maybe I'll write. Daryl Leach, thank you very much for spending time with us. We really appreciate what you have done and what you have to say.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
And I just hope our listeners will get busy and start writing their memoirs.
Our next class is going to be in April at Eastern Avenue Library.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there's your chance. Well, I guess we have no excuses left. We've got to get writing.
I'll think of one. I don't know why. You know, I do have things I would like to talk about, and I have things I would like to my children to know. But the problem with grandchildren is they're not at the point where they could write a memoir or have any interest in it. Mm-hmm. Right. And yet they're the ones I want to write for. But it won't be another 20 years before they get to the point where they want to know who I was.
Well, there are all sorts of things I don't want them to know.
Well, you can leave those out, right? Yeah. That's the problem.
Well, then there's nothing left to write about. We have a couple of minutes here. Do you have a book as we close out the year?
I have an interesting book. Alan Segaris gave me a book a couple of weeks ago by Matthew Pearl, P-E-A-R-L, called The Last Buccaneer. I bet you don't know what a buccaneer is.
A buccaneer is someone who steals books.
That's right. Who steals not only books, but manuscripts.
Oh.
This takes place in 1890, just as within several months of a new law, the International Copyright Law, coming into effect, that protects people like Mark Twain from being published by the British and getting no royalties. And so here's a job that is going to disappear, being a buccaneer, stealing these manuscripts and taking it to another publisher, because the copyright law is going to end all that, right?
Uh-huh.
And this deals with three buccaneers. I don't know how much of this is even based on fact. Three of the great buccaneers decide on one last heist, and they go to the Samoan Islands, where Robert Louis Stevenson is holed up working on what he considers his magnum opus.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to steal the manuscript. And first of all, they have to prevent each other from being the one to steal it. Then they have to ingratiate themselves in one way or another with Robert Louis Stevenson, who has hid himself away on a four-acre hilltop in Samoa. And first of all, they have to get to Samoa. And so this is a fight between the three buccaneers and Robert Louis Stevenson and the person who tells the story, who is one of those booksellers who goes through railroad trains with a little cart selling books to passengers who are commuting someplace. And it really is a kind of interesting, funny story. I don't know whether... I mean, I know there were people who stole these manuscripts, right? Mm-hmm. Mary Shelley is a particular example. People, or uncovering fake manuscripts, right? There's a fake early novel of Frankenstein that Mary Shelley never wrote, right? But which, you know, I mean, there are all kinds of ways of making money illicitly in books, and these people are all against a deadline of several months in which it's all going to be moot, right?
Here are people wasting their time trying to sell drugs.
I know. Anyway.
What's the book?
It's called The Last Buccaneer, B-O-O-K-A-N-E-E-R, Buccaneer.
Last Buccaneer. I would, you know, you've aroused my curiosity, so... But I don't think I dare ask you to tell me, you know, who succeeded, because that would spoil it.
Robert Louis Stevenson may have succeeded, but we will never know.
That's right. Okay, that'll do it for this year and this program. We'll be back next week, though. I'm Don Moot with Roll Tweet. See you next time on the next Scribble.